everyone, and welcome to minute 30 of season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is, from chronologically speaking, Duncan Shields. Welcome back, Duncan.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right. I'm glad to have you. I've had a fun time all week. Hopefully you have too. Hopefully everyone listening also has. That's probably more important than me and you having fun. But it's why we do it all, you know.
Yes.
So, all right. So minute 30 begins with John being propositioned and ends with Carmine giving his report. So yesterday we ended things with John getting the dossier from Al and looking it over and suspecting that there is something very fishy going on with it. And immediately after that happens, John hangs up the phone and gives a look to the steward, the rent-a-car girl, the budget rent-a-car girl, and she looks back at him and she starts off the minute by saying, "Say, I close in about an hour. Maybe we can go get a drink." And then John just looks at her and, picks up his hand, flips his ring a little bit. And, first of all, he's amused by it. He plays around with his ring and then he goes, "Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts." So obviously I'm assuming you know where that phrase comes from.
Dragnet.
Dragnet. That's correct. Now, do you know what a dragnet is?
I mean, I know that it is literally a net that you put into a river or a lake when you're trying to comb the bottom for a body or a search for whatever. But it's also when you want to do the same thing in spirit by closing a whole bunch of roads and putting cops at every intersection on every highway. So you're trying to catch anybody that's trying to flee.
Right. Well, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. That it's a way to coordinate apprehension of criminals or suspects, yeah. Between various, local and federal and I guess Interpol organizations, where you can set up roadblocks and traffic stops and by also doing DNA testing and, just making sure that there's full of police alertness, trying to find things. But you are correct. It comes from the fishing technique of dragging a fishing net across the sea bottom or through a promising area of open water, which is known to drag net, which just sounds really silly that, okay, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to drag net. What does that mean? We're going to be dragging the net.
Yeah.
It's self-explanatory. Yeah.
Pretty clear, yeah.
Yes. So Dragnet itself, the TV show that we refer to, was also a radio show, and it was also a movie series that dealt with the main character of detective LAPD detective Joe Friday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Friday.
Yes, it was created by actor and producer Jack Webb. The idea was that we're gonna always have coordination of trying to capture the suspects and stuff like that. It was one of the first and most famous police procedural crime dramas in media history. It managed to portray police work as dangerous and heroic and helped shape the public perception of what law enforcement was in the 20th century. It helped improve the public opinion of police officers. And what Webb wanted to do with the show was to make it that it was as realistic as possible and have unpretentious acting in the way that they would do things.
That's funny.
Obviously, it was the key influence on many, many other police procedurals, which up until today, we just have so many of them. Some better than others, but, still works. Do you know what year the radio show began?
I'm going to go with 52.
49.
49, all right.
Yes. Not bad. And then what's really interesting is that they had both the radio show and the TV show running simultaneously, because
Oh, that is interesting.
The radio show was from 49 to 57, and the TV show, they started showing it on TV in 51. That went from 51 to 59.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. They were basically the TV shows, most of them were adaptations of the radio show. But then they started making their own original plot lines later on. And then they revived the show again in the late 60s, so 67 to 70. They had it back. They actually have a movie which I've seen from 1954, which was an adaptation of one of the it was a full length feature, one of the things that they had to deal with. In 1966, they had a made for TV movie that was basically what initiated the return of the show, when they started it again.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have the famous one from 1987, the movie Dragnet with Dan Aykroyd.
Tom Hanks.
And Dan Aykroyd,
and Tom Hanks.
Then they had a TV show in 1989 called The New Dragnet, but that didn't work very well. It had a very short first season and a short second season. Then in 2003, they had another TV show called L.A. Dragnet, which also didn't last very long.
Oh, I remember that.
That was actually that was a Dick Wolf show. The guy who did Law and Order. So
that's right.
Yeah. And obviously we have the Dragnet theme, which is very popular. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. There are a lot of movies and TV shows that have done parodies of Dragnet, including the original Little Shop of Horrors. They have the voiceover and things like that where they did that. Sesame Street did a Dragnet skit, which had Sergeant Thursday and his partner Ben searching for the fugitive letter W.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes. And when they do find the letter W, it has disguised itself as the letter M by turning upside down.
Oh, classic W move.
Yes, that is correct. The Simpsons has one. There's an episode of The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh that has it. So, I mean, it's something that they've done quite often.
Yeah, but it's starting to get past its sell-by date. Like, I was born in 71. I got no idea until I was older what Dragnet was, but they're really, I mean, if they're still trying to court the boomer audience by throwing in references from 1950s TV shows, it's pretty wild that it was in The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're getting
to. That's true. And the final one that I have here is from I've only seen the first season of the show, and I've been meaning to see the rest of it. The Man in the High Castle. They actually have They have a German parody. It's basically a TV show based on a book about what would have happened if the Germans won World War II, and they have a show that's similar to Dragnet that's called American Reich, that people would
Reich.
Yes.
Oh man, I didn't watch all that. Yeah, I did the same thing. I watched the first season,
and I loved it. I just haven't had the time to watch the rest of it. I keep telling myself I gotta find time to see it.
That was all filmed here in Vancouver, or a lot of it was filmed here in Vancouver. I got friends who are on the show, so pretty big. It was a pretty big.
Right.
It was one of those high profile projects that gets done in Vancouver from time to time.
Makes sense. Makes sense. So John, is flirting a little too much, and he actually, just says just the facts. And, the pun is that in the TV show, Webb would say just the facts, F-A-C-T-S,
yeah.
And here it's just the facts, F-A-X, that type of thing. And then, John's pleased with himself, she smirks as he walks away. And then you see him walking through the airport, and starts taking out another cigarette. And then we get to see Sam Coleman again, who's on the phone. And she goes, "Hey, wait a second. I see somebody. I'll call you back." We saw her beforehand when she met Stewart, and she was talking with, the various people from the State Department and things like that. And then we see her quickly hang up the phone and walked, basically ghost John as she's walking through, and then she runs up to him and gets really close and goes, "Ghost of Christmas Past." Nakatomi, LA, you're John McClane, right? And he gets on a moving walkway and then says, who are you? She goes, Sam Coleman, WNTW News. And he goes, excuse me. And he starts walking through, you know, the people that are, you know, that are in front of him. Give me a break. I saw the stiff. Word is, that's your handiwork. He says, no, I only do needlepoint.
Da, 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 da.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not a joke that really, you know, fits very well. She also like puts out her hand, tries to shake his hand, tries to get in his way. You know, he doesn't want anything to do with her. And then he just leaves her, you know, shocked. Or not shocked.
Yes.
He leaves her more disturbed that she's not able to accurately get any information from him. You know, she's looking for that scoop.
She's frustratingly rebuffed.
Yes. That is very
but
true.
She's tenacious.
That's right. We'll see her again later. She'll be back. We're not done with her. You're what?
No, we're not done with her. I'm a big fan of Sheila McCarthy. She's the actor here.
Yes.
She's Canadian, which is really cool. She was in a very big movie here called I've Heard the Mermaids Singing in 1987. And then just recently she was in Women Talking,
yes,
which won the Oscar for best screenplay recently.
Yes, I saw her in that, and I thought she did a great job in that. I immediately recognized her. I was like, oh,
awesome.
That's Sheila McCarthy.
Yeah. That's her. And I like that. I'm really, one thing I really like about her in this movie is that she's not some like Christmas Jones knockout supermodel love interest posing as a hard-nosed reporter. Like, she actually looks like a career journalist who's good at her job. She's not just another like eye candy, you know, sex target throwing herself at McClane. She's not just some hot young reporter who's like, give me the scoop, and while you're at it, let's get a hotel room. Like, she's actually a professional doing her job, and he interacts with her on that level. And I thought that was pretty cool. I like that. I like that part of the film.
Yeah. No,
but
understand. They make her seem, you know, like a real reporter the way that they do it, which is good.
Yeah. It's interesting that, like, I have days where I wonder if the entire movie was written to support the joke, just the facts, ma'am. Like, it's such an amazing get, you know, because he's a cop, he's saying just the facts, it's a fax. Like, it's one of those jokes where you've been waiting, not just in Die Hard, but you've been waiting for that joke to be used in some movie somewhere at some point. And here it is. And we're like, yay. But this is also like, this minute here, I'm really happy I got this minute specifically, because this is where we fly off planet Earth, as far as I'm concerned, to planet make-believe for good. This is like, it's been pushing the envelope up till now, but from here on out, it's utter fantasy. This is Bruce Willis having a dream, because he's taken over her office, taken over her phone, taken over her technology, asked to be shown how to use it, you know, been smarmy, and then she throws herself at him. She's like, maybe we could get a drink. And then he wiggles his wedding ring, and I'm not sure if you noticed, but in the soundtrack there's a literal,
yes,
ting,
yes.
A glint sound effect off his ring, and I'm like, nope. And then he says, just the facts, ma'am. I'm like, this is utter make-believe, utter fantasy. I'm like, I'm along for the ride now, but I don't believe for a second that any of this is remotely rooted in reality. But she didn't do, this was her first gig there. Lauren Letherer, the actress who played the rent-a-car girl. She did a bunch of TV series work, including Hawaii Five-O in 2016. But she played Nurse Laurel on Days of Our Lives from 1990 all the way to 2017. And her latest credit is 2015. So she's still working, but her IMDb picture is wild. It's like she's wearing torn jeans and an AC/DC t-shirt, and she's smoking. It's like, wow, this is not a normal headshot. Huh. So I wonder what she's been through in the last, you know, whatever, 23 years, 33 years.
Yeah. You never know. You don't know what people go through.
Yeah. But I like Michelle McCarthy when she's like, the ghost of Christmas past, Nakatomi, LA, John McClane, right? I'm like, that's a good opening line. That's a witty solid, sweet opening line, I thought. So that was it's good that she got his attention with that.
Yeah. You were just talking before about Lauren Lethier,
yeah.
Right? So she actually has a credit from this past year. She played. Did you ever see the movie? Have you seen the movie To Leslie?
Not yet. I really want to, though.
Andrea Riseborough was nominated for an Oscar for her work in that.
The amazing
and Andrea Riseborough. She plays Leslie's mother.
No way! Oh, I have to see this movie now. Okay, cool.
There you go. Again, she's 33 years removed from Die Hard 2. So she's a little older and can play, can play that type of mother figure.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, it's also interesting how we've gone from the solid gold of just the facts to the kind of head scratcher of no, I only do needlepoint in the same minute. I don't really even understand the needlepoint gag because he didn't stab him. He shot him.
No, she says handiwork.
Yeah, handiwork. And so he's like, no, I only do needlepoint. I don't know.
Yeah, it's as if he's just, he just sews. I don't know. He's making an Afghan. I don't know.
Womp womp.
But he tries to be, at the beginning, he tries to be polite until he figures out who she is.
Yeah, that he's like, journalist, eject.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And then the shot changes and they bring us back to the control tower. And we see our good friend Trudeau again.
Yep.
And he goes, great, National just shut down, totally iced. They'll send us their planes. And then we get a response, happy, happy holiday.
And then, yes.
So, first of all, the idea that they're saying, okay, now, the distance between Reagan, National, and Dulles is not that far. So, if they're closed down, you'd think that Dulles is getting close to that. The weather can't be that different.
No.
So why is it, okay, now they're going to move everyone over to us? I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's right. Is the blizzard happening 2 miles over there? Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that's okay. Right. Well,
The distance is a little bit more than 2 miles, but still.
Yeah. If the whole eastern seaboard's being taken out by a blizzard, then.
The distance between Dulles and Reagan is about 30 miles. It's a 30-mile difference. But again, I don't think that the weather is going to be very different between the two. I don't think that you're going to be able to say, oh, well, this place is icing up, but over there, everything's fine, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So what do you know about Ronald Reagan National Airport?
Nothing.
You know anything about it?
Zero.
Okay, so sometimes it's only known as National, sometimes it's known as Washington National, sometimes it's known as Reagan National, sometimes it's known as DCA, sometimes Reagan, or sometimes simply National. So it's an airport that is on the other side of the Potomac from Washington, D.C., than Dulles. It was opened originally in 1941 and originally was named Washington National Airport.
I was wondering if it had if it was built as Ronald Reagan or had its name
changed. No. Right. And in 1998, Congress passed a bill renaming it Ronald Reagan National Airport, which is very interesting because, Clinton signed that into law. So right. He didn't have a problem naming it after an opponent from the other side of the aisle, I guess.
Yeah.
It operates with close oversight by the federal government because of its proximity to the Capitol itself.
Sure.
There are lots of problems because of the fact because it's so close to Washington, there's a whole bunch of areas that are that you can't fly over.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so planes are required to take unusually complicated paths to avoid restricted and prohibited airspace above sensitive landmarks, government buildings, and military installations in and around Washington, D.C. And they must comply with some of the tightest noise restrictions in the entire country.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a hub for American Airlines and has 91 nonstop destinations from there.
Okay, 91. That's quite a
lot. It's technically an international airport, but it rarely deals with international flights, which I guess is why They're bringing Esperanza's plane to Dulles.
Yeah.
It makes sense. In 2018, they had 23.5 million passengers that passed through the airport, and in 2019, they had 23,945,000,
All right.
which they basically say is only an increase of 1.8%.
Yeah, that's not a huge difference.
It's still broke a record for the airport.
Yeah.
Now, for me, the one thing that always reminds me of Washington National Airport is I remember in 1982 there was a very bad plane crash that happened right outside of Washington Airport, and they actually made a movie about it called Flight 90.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, it was a flight that was going from DC to, I think, Florida. They had too much ice on their wings, and the plane wasn't able to take off, and it crashed, and just about everybody was killed. 74 people were killed on the flight, as well as 4 people on vehicles on the bridge that were
Yikes.
killed throughout the whole thing. I mean, it happens to be a great movie, the way that they do it, the way that they show it. There were very few people that were. It doesn't list here how many people survived. I think from the movie, if I remember correctly, there were like 6 people that survived.
That's not a lot.
Here it is. Five. Okay, here they say the 6 people were rescued, but only 5 lived. One of the passengers died later.
Jeez Louise. Nightmare.
But again, it's a great movie. If anyone wants to, if anyone, I mean, I like watching disaster movies.
Yeah.
So, especially real ones. So it's called Flight 90 on the Potomac or something like that, if I remember correctly. It happens again. It's great. It has Richard Mazur is on it. Mazur, however you want to refer to him.
That's right, Flight 90, disaster on the Potomac.
There you go. Disaster on the Potomac. And now we're back in the control tower. We get Carmine continuing to. He starts to talk and he goes, "The worst part, Mr. Trudeau, was the press. They were here anyway, crawling all over the Esperanza story." And then he gets cut off. So people are going to have to come back on Monday to find out the rest of what he says. But my first question is why is the chief of police coming to police, the chief of the airport police coming to the tower in order to give an update as to what's going on? Like,
Yeah, I know. It's like this guy here, this Trudeau, just seems like he's in charge of everything. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, the restaurant food orders guy came up to him and was like, "I need you to sign off on this." And he'd be like, 18 dozen buns. We're not gonna need that many." Like,
Right.
he's like, maybe he's got a schedule the cleaning staff as well. Like, it seems like everybody's coming to him. Like Lloyd Bridges in the Airplane or
Yeah.
something, asking him for advice on literally everything that's happening. Like, I'm with you. I'm mystified as
Yeah.
to why the chief of airport police would be reporting to the guy who's in charge of the traffic control.
Yeah, sure.
That's another part of this movie that's like, have you ever been inside a baggage handling facility? Have you ever been inside an air traffic control facility? Do you know anything about the upper management of airports? Like, there's like this stuff is
Yeah.
just willy-nilly kind of happening in this movie. And I'm like, sure, man, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
But Dennis
Exactly.
Franz, the one and only Dennis Franz,
Dennis Franz, yes.
Emmy award-winning Dennis Franz. I loved his character,
Sipowicz.
Sipowicz in NYPD Blue, and I'm really glad that he got to be on NYPD Blue and really, shine, because he kind of was that show, especially
And
after
show his
Caruso.
ass.
And show his ass. Yeah.
That's Seriously. All right, you have anything else before we get into the script?
I know just some stuff that happened. I like just like in terms of the movie that's happened up till now. I like that the title for Die Hard 2 comes up just pow, like RoboCop, no produced by or anything, just like bang, Die
Yeah.
Hard 2. Here we go. McClane hates scarves, apparently. He's walking around in the dead of winter with his chest open to the elements. I was not prepared for a buck naked William Sadler. That was something that caught me by surprise. I was like, oh, okay. And his crew, this is Robert Patrick, Don Harvey, Vondi Curtis Hall, all these people that I'm like, oh, like they were
John
nobodies at the
Leguizamo.
time. Yeah, John Leguizamo does a surprise appearance later on in the film. I was just like, wow, that's great. Great to see them all. And boy, security in this airport is lax.
I think lax is a very polite term for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's all. Right. That's all.
Yeah. Okay, so the script has some extra lines, so we'll quickly go through that. So first of all, the girl says, "Say I close in an hour, maybe we could," and then he cuts her off, shows her wedding ring, his wedding ring, and says, "Just a fax, ma'am, just a fax." So the line is in the script. Okay, Sam isn't on a phone call. She's trotting down the linoleum next to the walkway, trying to keep up with him. And then she says, "The Ghost of Christmas Past, Nakatomi, L.A. You're John McClane, right?" And he goes, "Depends who you are." And then she says, "Sam Komen, WADC News. Hey, I know how you feel about the media, but we're not all like that Putz Thornburg. He crossed the line. That's why they canned him out in L.A. Yeah, now he's on the network interviewing transsexual gum surgeons and laughing all the way to the bank."
What, transsexual gum surgeons? Oh my gosh, that's random.
The guy makes Geraldo look like Walter Cronkite. Doesn't mean you can't cut me some slack. I saw the stiff. Word is it was your handiwork. Nah, I do needlepoint. And he's at the end of the hallway, at the walkway, and he quickly disappears into the crowd, leaving Sam pissed, puzzled, and out of breath. And then it says, inside the air traffic control, Lorenzo has joined the regulars here to cover his ass. And then it says, Lorenzo just says, "Well, the press was here crawling all over the Esperanza story." So again, they cut out all of Trudeau's lines in the script. It's not there with him telling about what has happened, you know, in National, the National was closed down and all that stuff. Okay, so every Friday we have a special segment, which my guests don't know anything about. And so Duncan is going to be surprised. It's called Where Are They Up To This Weekend? And what I decide to do is if I'm dealing with a Movies by Minute guest, so I will see how much they actually remember about the movies that they've done, Movies by Minute.
Oh.
If it's someone who doesn't, then I will choose, they will give me a list of their favorite movies, not knowing why, and then I will quiz them on that. So basically the question that I have for you, let's start with, the two movies that I know that Duncan has done is Time Bandits and Tron. Yeah. So let's start with Time Bandits. What do you think is going on in Time Bandits at the end of week six? Okay. Again, there's a little bit of leeway here because, you know, different versions, you know, the minutes might be a little off here or there, whatever it is. What do you think is going on?
End of week six. So that'd be minute 18, I think.
No. Again, you do 3 minutes a week. I'm talking about minute 30.
Oh, minute 30. Oh, okay. Minute.
So for you, it'll be much later than that. But I want you to do this from your memory, not looking up.
No. I just want to know the minute that we're talking about.
Right. Minute 29, 30, 31, something like that. What is going on at that point?
Let's see. They have, at that point, I believe they've already, let's see, it opens, blah, 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 do-do-do. I think they've already pushed the wall out of Kevin's room and they've fallen through the pit. They're meeting Napoleon.
No, they've already finished Napoleon.
Oh, they finished Napoleon.
They just landed in Sherwood Forest and basically have ransacked the carriage and taking prisoners,
taking everything
as they're trying to figure out
delightful Michael Palin and Shelley Duvall.
Yes, correct. Now what I love about this the most is that 2 minutes from now is where I was on your show.
Oh, great. good.
So yeah, all right, great. That's very good for Time Bandits. And now let's go with Tron.
Sure.
Where are they up to in Tron at the 30 minute mark?
At the 30-minute mark, I believe he is meeting Rom. No, he's in the jail cell there. Tron has been sucked into the grid, and he's in a jail cell talking to Crom.
Okay, at exactly the 30-minute mark, he gets sucked into the system.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
Awesome. Yeah. Definitely. All right. Great. I'm glad. First of all, I'm glad to take you back on that journey through time.
Yeah.
To see where things are, to see, compare and contrast what we're doing here, what you did there, things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, great. So, Duncan, is there anything else you want to say about this movie that you haven't said yet?
Just that it's a fun romp. I don't for a second believe that any of it is accurate or researched. I think that the church part is weird to me, the old abandoned church. I'm just like, why, what the heck? That's a really weird set choice or building choice. I found that to be pretty odd. A lot of the helicopter stunts were really good. The final shot there, the final explosion, I don't know if that is even remotely possible.
But we don't watch these movies for reality. We watch them for the fun of it.
That the good thing, the good thing about the first movie was that by whatever means of trickery and by whatever means of movie magic and by whatever means of performance, it came off as
more realistic.
At the outer edge of believability.
Okay.
Not in turn. Like, I don't think anybody's, I think maybe one person's gun runs out of bullets in the first movie, So like not like full on documentary, but there was something about it that John McClane really came across as somebody that you were like, that was close. Even though, he's going to live till the end of the movie. There were enough scenes in the movie that made you go, man, he almost didn't get out of that one. And that's the mark of a good action movie of like, if you actually believe that the main character is in jeopardy and you're like, you know, they're not, but if you actually feel that, then that's good. That's a sign of a good movie. And I didn't at any point have that feeling with this movie that John McClane was in any danger. It's just, I'm like, sure thing, buddy. This is just a fever dream of, bad guy terrorists and manly men doing manly things and all the women love John McClane and blah, blah, blah. But, stuff blows up real good in this movie. Stuff blows up real good. So I'm not, poo-pooing the movie. In terms of what it is, it's no Die Hard 1, but it's a pretty solid second entry. It's not the nosedive that a lot of sequels do. Right. So,
okay. All right. Do you want to once again tell people where they can find Duncan Shields?
Just go to Chronologically Speaking or Google the Time Bandits Minute or look for Buy Duncan Shields on all of your regular social media outlets.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Duncan, thank you very much for joining me this week. I had a lot of fun. I hope you too.
I did, yes.
And I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here